Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in.
Today's episode is brought to you by Atlantic Carolinas Title, a proud affiliated partner of Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group and your go-to title solution for North and South Carolina. Atlantic Carolinas Title is owned in part by Atlantic Bay, making it more than just a preferred vendor. It's a true extension of the Atlantic Bay family. That means when you refer business to Atlantic Carolinas Title, you're supporting a partner that directly contributes to Atlantic Bay's long-term performance and profitability. Atlantic Carolinas Title is backed by Investors Title, a market leader with over 50 years of underwriting experience. That partnership gives you and your borrowers access to faster turnarounds, responsive legal and underwriting support, and one of the most robust prior policy databases in the state, which often results in reissue rate discounts for your clients. Working with Atlantic Carolinas Title means fewer delays, smoother closings, and a team that understands the way Atlantic Bay does business. You'll benefit from local expertise, consistent communication, and a shared commitment to delivering an exceptional borrower experience. Referring to Atlantic Carolinas Title is simple. Talk with your closing attorney about issuing title through Atlantic Carolinas Title or speak directly with your borrowers about their title provider preference. Once Atlantic Carolinas Title is selected, just ensure the attorney receives the signed affiliated business disclosure and places the order accordingly. Together, we close stronger because when Atlantic Carolinas Title wins, Atlantic Bay wins, and so do you.
All right, we're back with another episode. I am your host today, Hannah McManus, and today on Lending Forward, we are diving into one of the most powerful yet often misunderstood tools in real estate investing, the 1031 exchange. And we couldn't have asked for a better guide than Matt Linville, who is a nationally recognized expert on investment strategy and real estate portfolio optimization. Matt is the VP of marketing at Investors Title, where he helps educate investors, advisors, and real estate professionals on how to unlock long-term wealth through strategic 1031 exchange structures. So, Matt, you've helped our team tremendously, and I'm so excited to have you join the podcast and educate all of us on the 1031 exchange. So welcome to Lending Forward.
Had wonderful to be with you. I appreciate the invite. I'm going to take you on the road with me, and I'm just going to let you introduce me to everyone because you said that. You made me sound so good. I appreciate that.
I can record it, or you can have the recording. Yeah. Play it every time you go somewhere. Well, before we dig in, because this is such like a niche episode, a niche product that we're going to talk about, I have to hear, how did you fall into this space?
Yeah, so you're right. 1031 like kind of exchanges are a very niche portion of the tax code and certainly a service to taxpayers. So many years ago, Hannah, more than I would like to count, I started work with Wachovia Bank in downtown Winston, came in financial planning, went over to personal trust. And about that time, the bank created their own qualified intermediary working on 1031 like kind exchanges. Happened to have a friend in that department. She invited me over to kind of see what it was. She thought that I would like this. And she was right. So almost 25 years later, I have to always give her the anonymous pat on the back for introducing me to 1031s. And what I love about them is they're so powerful, Hannah, and they help everyone. I don't care if you're a one-off owner of a small rental property or you're a huge corporation that's selling, you know, investment or commercial real estate. Either way, it helps every individual the same. And so it's just a passion of mine professionally. I love talking about it. I go to sleep thinking about it. I wake up thinking about it. I'm just that weird guy. That's me.
Well, I'm excited to dig in. So, I mean, I think most of us have heard of a 1031, but if you don't mind, can you break it down into plain and simple terms for those of us that might not dream about it at all.
Yes, absolutely. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, Anna. Yeah. So let's look at it as a gift. And I think that's the best way to kind of couch this. This is the IRS purposefully and willfully telling any taxpayer who happens to own commercial or investment real estate, listen, when you sell that piece of real estate, if you will take the proceeds from sale and roll that over into purchasing other real estate that, again, you would hold for business or investment purposes, the IRS says instead of taxing you on the gain from the sale of that property as they normally would, we'll allow you to defer paying us as long as you take those proceeds and reinvest them. So basically what the IRS is saying is don't pay us tax right now. Take all the money that you receive from the sale of the piece of property and reinvest it. And I think of it this way. And I don't know if you and I are the same, but we filed taxes last year, right? Not too long ago. And one of the most exciting things is when we file our tax return and we find out that we're actually getting a return back. We're getting some money back. It's like, right, like you have these, you know, the two sitting on your shoulder and one says, hey, you should take that and pay off some debt. Or this one goes, hey, you should take that and create more debt. Yeah. And we get all excited. And then there's that moment of realization where, okay, whose money am I getting back? Right? It's my money. Mm-hmm. And how much interest, Hannah, if you got a return back this year, Anna, how much interest did the IRS pay you while they were holding your money?
Zero.
Exactly the same as I got, right? Zero. So that's, I kind of look at it as balancing out what the IRS is saying. Okay, taxpayer, keep the money that you owe us. You reinvest it. You build your real estate portfolio and use that money. And guess how much interest you owe the IRS? Zero. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
That's a really good way to look at it. It's a really easy way to understand what exactly we're talking about. So thank you for kind of laying it out.
Sure.
So if we can understand, you know, 1031 exchanges, how do they actually help agents and loan officers better serve their investor clients, or I mean, even grow their business?
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the interesting things is when I talk with residential agents and their main business, Hannah, might be helping people find their next new home. It's not investment as far as the IRS considers an investment property. Certainly, it's a huge investment for the family, but we're talking about an IRS real estate, you know, investment type product. And they'll say, well, Matt, this is all nice and everything, but I don't know if it is going to really help me in what I do. And I would say this, Hannah, I think one of the questions, if I was a real estate agent, one of the questions that I would ask the family that I'm working with, especially if I knew they were moving in from out of town or out of state, is, listen, back home, do you happen to own any investment property? I mean, Hannah, what's the worst thing they could say?
Yeah.
No. Well, you know, we hear that every day. No is perfectly acceptable, okay? But what if they said, you know what, we do. Okay. Well, have you ever thought about selling that piece of property? Because let's say you're moving in from Ohio, okay? You're moving in from 7 hours away, and what are you going to do with the property? Have you thought about selling? Well, no, I haven't thought about selling it, Hannah. We're moving the family. We're trying to find what good schools are here. We're moving jobs, you know, whatever the million things that the taxpayers mm-hmm. is thinking about. Well, what if you could sell that piece of property in Ohio and not pay any tax? Okay, you've got my ear. Talk to me. And while you're down here with me and we're trying to find your next forever home, I can take you out and I can show you a couple of properties that might be a really good investment for you. Because I think that solves two problems, Hannah. I think we're solving some pain points for a client before they're really even thinking about it. Is number one, maybe it was a small rental property they inherited from their parents when they passed, and they've been renting it out, personally managing it, but now they're moving far away. And maybe they have to put it with a property management group. And there's, listen, I love property management groups, but, you know, what if that cost of now having a property management group look after that property eats up most or all of the profit that they were gaining off of that piece of property?
Mm-hmm.
And two, a property management company, though they might be the most wonderful company in the world, they still don't solve every headache from investment property ownership. They can certainly help with some, but not everything. So what if they could relocate that piece of property back to where they are now? And I would say that, listen, if the area is good enough to move your family, it's probably good enough to invest in as well. So again, that agent is not an attorney, or they're not playing the part of an attorney or a tax advisor. But by a simple question, I think they could open up potential for that family. Maybe something they haven't thought of, and maybe there's another two or three sales that mm-hmm. they might have. Maybe they're not licensed in Ohio, that's fine, but they could certainly help them find that replacement property back in North Carolina. So I think that's one thing. And from the loan officer aspect, and I know we'll talk about timeframes and the things that are you know, can cause stress and anxiety within the 1031 itself. But if I'm a loan officer, I want to be as familiar as I can with what dates and timeframes my client is most sensitive to. And again, you know, our identification periods, but then really for the loan officer, it's that closing. How long does a taxpayer have before they actually have to close and take title to that new property so that they meet the guidelines of the 1031? And how does underwriting play into that? And how does the loan officer's knowledge of 1031s and how they work and the issues that can come up, how does that assist the taxpayer as opposed to, you know, cause any miscommunication that may delay things? So I think the knowledge of 1031, though it is small and though it's not every client that they work with, for those that they do, I think it will just help them provide the level of customer service I know that they desire to.
I love that. And I think it, you know, it builds on building that relationship with the client, just asking that simple question, getting the, you know, full picture of why they're moving, what they have. You know, it just helps open up the conversation without being too pushy. So, okay, I'm a real estate agent and I've asked my client, do you have an investment property? They do. They might be interested in selling it. What are my steps? Like, what do I do? You mentioned, you know, the closing date and the title date and the, you know, all of the pieces that have to come together to make a 1031 work. Mm-hmm. What do my steps look like?
So I would say the first step, if I had a client who was interested in selling investment property and we kind of briefly talked about 1031s, I think one of the more frequent questions that I might get, that the agent may get also, or even the loan officer, is should I do a 1031 or not? Okay, now I've just learned about this. Should I do it? Well, that's a great question that the agent, the loan officer, myself serving as the qualified intermediary, we're not going to answer for them. And here's the reason I say that. So again, we don't play the part of attorney or tax advisor on these deals, but just from the investor's standpoint, one of the things that I might ask a client when they call me is, okay, what is the adjusted cost basis of your property that you're looking at selling? Now, how many people know that? There are some, absolutely, but there's some that do not. And so what goes on in my head, the conversation in my head is, okay, if you don't know what the adjusted cost basis of your property is, then you don't know what the gain in your property is. And if you don't know what the gain is, then you don't know what the potential tax is. And if you don't know the potential tax, then you don't have all the information that that taxpayer needs to determine whether or not a 1031 is beneficial to them. So my first suggestion is have them talk with their tax advisor and see, gosh, is there a good reason to do a 1031? What is the tax that I may potentially defer? Is there something in my larger tax picture, losses or you know, carry forwards that may eat up some of that gain from the sale of the property where 1031 isn't as attractive as it might seem? So I think there's a lot of questions that that taxpayer needs to ask and needs to have the answer to that may not come from the agent, may not come from the loan officer, and certainly would not come from the qualified intermediary. So I think that's a good first step. Put them on a firm foundation of what is the potential tax that I may owe on this sale, and is it worth then really pursuing that conversation on a 1031 like kind of exchange.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. So from a lending standpoint, what do loan officers need to know about financing in the context of a 1031? It does sound like there's some additional steps. I mean, what do they need to know? And then you kind of touched on it, but, you know, where are the gotchas around, you know, timing and structuring the loan?
Yeah. Okay. So let's take a step back and let's talk about what it means to get a 100% deferral on the piece of property that I'm selling. And this will help us walk right into the LOs. So let's say that I'm selling a piece of property for $1 million. Okay. It's a residential investment, a single family beach home, and I'm selling it for $1 million. And I have a $250,000 note on the property. So again, using round figures, because I need that for my
brain. We all need
brain. That's right. So I sell, and of course I pay that off. At the end of the day, I have $750,000 to basically reinvest. Now, we know that's not the case because there's closing costs and attorney's fees. I know our agents who may hear this care about commissions. So all of that kind of comes out of that $750,000. But again, let's say it's $750,000 to reinvest. And what the IRS says is if you want a full tax deferral, is that if you sell for $1 million, you need to buy for at least $1 million. So in that case, it means I need to use all of the equity from my sale. So that's $750,000 plus or minus $750,000. And I need to go out and either get a new note for at least $250,000. Or if I have my own cash of $250,000, and Hannah, who doesn't have their own $250,000 of cash sitting around, usually people go out and get a new loan. So I think that's really important from a loan officer perspective, because let's say I have a client who calls me, I'm the LO, they call me and say, hey, Matt, what's the payoff? What's my note on X property? Well, what should be my first question as an LO?
Why are you asking?
What's going on? Yeah, what's happening? And are we thinking about selling, refinancing? What are we doing, right? So, and if they talk about selling, well, if I'm the LO and that's my note, I probably know they've treated it as an investment property. Hopefully that's the type of structure we have from the financing side. And so my first question might be to them, hey, you're looking at selling. Okay. And are you thinking about a 1031? Well, why would that be important to the client they're talking to? And why would that be helpful to the LO? Well, if they are considering a 1031, and that LO should know, I think it'd be helpful to know that the equity, again, needs to be used, and they also need to replace any debt that they're relieved of on sale. So that typically is going to mean a new note. Mm-hmm. And if I'm the LO, I want to be in that first position to talk with them about securing that new financing on the property or properties that they might buy in that 1031 like kind of exchange. So there could be multiples with multiple notes. So I guess from an LO perspective, that's why it's important from the 1031 side, is if I'm working with a client who calls me, wants to know a note payoff, or if they're calling, inquiring about a new loan, I want to know, is this a part of a 1031 or not? Because again, I know there are timeframes that this taxpayer is going to be tied to. Mm. And I need to know, can we go ahead and start our underwriting process now? Or do we have to wait till later? Is the length and time of my underwriting going to run into or bump up against the timeframes they may have with their 1031? That would be something we need to really talk about. So I think about, those are the things that I think about when I'm talking to a loan officer or I'm talking with a client before they call their LO. Here's the things you might want to go ahead and discuss with them and why it might be important to your overall transaction's success and timeline.
I love that. And I have two probably dumb questions, but I'm going to ask them. What is the timeline? Is there like a standard timeline? And then also you mentioned buying multiple properties. Can you, it sounds like you can buy multiple properties after you sell one. So if you sold that $1 million property, you could buy a couple smaller properties and it would still qualify.
Yeah, I get to give you my favorite response. Yes and yes, absolutely. So yeah, so there is a time frame. And this is true for exchanges across the board. It doesn't matter what type of property, commercial, residential, where you are. There are two very firm time clocks, Hannah, and they both begin to tick the day that they close on the sale of their first property. So we're selling property A and we're buying property B. So when I sell property A, the two time clocks that begin to tick are my 45-day identification period and my 180-day exchange period.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So what the IRS says is the taxpayer has 45 days to identify potential replacement property, meaning if I want to buy property B and property C, then I need to identify them in writing, signed and dated, and that's delivered to the qualified intermediary by midnight of the 45th day, 45 days after I close on the sale of my piece of property, okay? And just a reminder for folks, those 45 days are calendar days, not business days. So Saturdays and Sundays, rainy days and Mondays, I don't feel like it days, I'm on vacation days, holidays, all of those count in that 45-day identification period. So if I'm an agent, Hannah, and I am working with a client who is doing a 1031, I need to know that they have those 45 days. I need to know that pressure that the taxpayer, my client's feeling, so that I can be, as an agent, I can be a pusher and say, listen, I know you've got 30 days. I know you got 10 days. And let's look at it a second way, Hannah. If Abigail and I are looking at buying a property in a market and we call an agent, agent picks up the phone and I say to them, hey, my name's Matt. I am on day 42. And I just pause. And if the reply back to me isn't, Matt, you've got 3 days. Why have you waited so long to call me? I'm getting ready to send you an email, or if you're close to me, I'm going to come by your house and pick you up and we're going to go look at some properties together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the response I would want as a taxpayer who's undertaking a 1031 from an agent. So I think from, again, from the agent and the LO perspective, it's great to know the time frames and the pain points. And listen, I know that whoever's hearing this never has a client who is anxious about the sale of their property. Has anybody looked at it? What are we going to sell it for? Or when can we close? When's the loan package going to be done? Well, if they're in a 1031, then they might have a little bit extra.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying. And so if the agent or the LO can step up and help them absorb that extra, I think they can make a client friend for life.
I think that's where if you can do it well, you will 100% have the client for life and you will have their friends and family who are also looking to do the same thing, hands down. But I mean, 45 days have me in a panic a little bit, honestly. I mean, that's a short window. So what advice do you give our listeners to help keep the client calm, that keep them from panicking? I know you have to be a pusher. You have to stay on top of it. But is there any other advice that you can give us that we are working with these taxpayers, these buyers that are on day 20, day 30 and are freaking out?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing. To officially identify property, it does not have to be under contract. So I think that's a great help. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me go to the ridiculous side of things, Hannah. I could drive down a street and just start listing addresses as potential property and have no idea if I would want them, if the owner would be even willing to sell it. So that's how ridiculous I could be in my choices of what I identify. So I think if from the agent perspective, I know I have a client who is considering a 1031, or maybe they're under contract to sell theirs and they have a closing date of 30, 60 days, whatever it may be. I may go ahead and start sending them properties now. Go ahead and start talking to them about what an agent would normally talk about. Where are you looking? What type of properties are you interested in? What do you think would be most beneficial? What markets are you looking in? You know, if it's a residential investment, are you looking at single family or duplex, quads? You know, those type of things. And that way the agent can have a better understanding and go ahead and start kind of pairing out some of those properties that they know would not work and really help them see the properties that may be of most interest. That's number one. Number two, you have the ability to identify multiple properties in that 45 days. And that's important, Hannah, because let's say, again, I'm selling A and I want to buy B. Well, let's say B is the only property that I identify.
Okay.
Day 45 comes and goes. And what the IRS will say is whatever is identified, whatever's on record is identified by day 45, midnight, day 45, set it in stone. Okay. You'll have to buy at least that property or one of the properties that you identified to get any tax deferral treatment. So if I identified property B, I wasn't under contract, and on day 47, the property falls off the market for the million reasons that it can, I don't have a backup. I can't go and re-identify if the house burned down, if the seller died, if somebody else came in and swept it up and bought it before I could go under contract. The IRS has no heart for that. And so if I'm working with a taxpayer as an agent, I want to make sure they have some backups. Okay, you want to buy B? Wonderful. If we can't close on B, or once you start to do your due diligence and you get into the property and you go, there's no way I'm buying property, then let's have some backups just in case. So I think the agent being aware of the ability to identify multiple properties, and there's rules and regulations around how many and how much, but that would be extremely helpful. So go ahead and start as soon as you can. Look at a host of properties and then whittle those down and help the taxpayer see the options that they have. And from the loan officer standpoint, since they have to close within 180 days of the time that they sold the piece of property, what is the average length of underwriting for that LO? And so they can tell a client, listen, if you want to close on a piece of property and work with me, then I need to have everything that I'm going to require of you within 20 days of closing, or whatever that number is, so that taxpayer is the one who now has the knowledge and is responsible for getting everything that LO needs for the underwriting process to make sure they can close.
Setting those proper expectations is extremely important in these cases.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, Anna.
Gotcha. You gave us kind of a loophole of just writing down as many properties as you want. But I love hearing like myths or, you know, what can we bust? I'm sure there's myths. What's the biggest myth about 1031s that you want to clear up for all of our listeners?
You don't have enough time, Hannah.
That could be a whole other episode.
It is. That's like episode number two. Yeah, myth busters with Hannah and Matt. Okay, a couple of things. Number one, when we talk about what the definition of like kind is, it's so much more broad than the title actually allows it to be. And what the IRS said is, it's any real property for any other real property as long as it's used for business or investment. So that means I can sell a single family rental and I can absolutely go buy another single family rental. But that's not what like-kind limits you to. I could sell a single family rental and go out and buy multifamily. I could sell multifamily and go buy a car wash, sell a car wash and buy a warehouse. I could sell a warehouse and buy a portfolio of single family rentals. So it's residential to commercial, commercial to residential, income producing to non-income producing and vice versa. I can sell land and go out and buy, you know, an improved property. So there is so much that's available through the 1031. It's not just I'm selling land. I know I have to buy land. You can, but that's not what you're limited to. So I think that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two is the debt issue that we talked about, Hannah, is that note, when it's paid off at closing, that's a benefit to the taxpayer. It's called debt relief. And that debt relief is taxable just like cash would be if they walked away with it at closing. And so the debt in the deal is just as important as the equity when we have a taxpayer who wants to make sure to defer every single bit that they can. That's so very important. Three, you've got to have a qualified intermediary involved in your 1031. It's an absolute must. So, Hannah, I say this all the time. The saddest call that I get, and I've already received two this week, is when the client calls and says, Matt, I'm so-and-so. I learned about the 1031. I want to do an exchange. And that's not the sad part. I love that part. The sad part comes in with my follow-up question, which is always, that's wonderful. When are you closing? And they say, oh, well, we closed yesterday. Now, been around long enough to ask, okay, do you mean that you signed a contract yesterday, or do you mean you're at the closing table? And if they were at the closing table and closed, then they don't have a 1031. Mm. That taxpayer must have an exchange agreement signed and dated with a qualified intermediary by at least the closing table to have a 1031. And the whole reason, Hannah, that Investors Title Exchange Corporation exists as a qualified intermediary is the IRS said we are one of those necessary third parties that has to be involved in the exchange to make it an exchange. And so the normal process is they go to closing, or, you know, exchange agreement signed, they go to closing. And a lot of our agents find out that this transaction they've been working on is a 1031 once they look at the HUD. Because it may say the seller as Investors Title Exchange Corporation as qualified intermediary for, boom, their client. And so that's different. And then on the dispersals, you'll see monies to or proceeds to Investors Title Exchange Corporation as QI for client. And that money from the sale goes directly from the closing attorney's escrow account to the qualified intermediary. It never passes through the taxpayer's hands. Mm-hmm. If they touch it, if they get a check, and they, even if they haven't cashed it, they still have a constructive receipt, and the IRS will look at that and go, no, no good. Mm-hmm. So make sure that the qualified intermediary is involved. Those are some of my tops. There's 1,000 others, but those are the ones that I hear on the regular.
Those are really good. We might actually have to have another round two myth buster.
Let's do it.
Because that is really good information to have. I know we're coming up on time, but I did want to ask, I mean, because it sounds like there's an opportunity as your past client is looking to sell to bring this up and talk to them. Now, is there a way, because I know we have a lot of mortgage bankers and I know there's a lot of loan officers out there that are looking for ways to bring more value to their clients, more value to their agents, more value to their referral partners. I mean, is there a way, or do you have any tips on how to make this kind of a best practice to advise your client, advise your past client on how to, you know, scale up their investments or diversify their investments? I mean, when you were talking about the light kind, right? Like you can go buy a car wash, you can go buy land. It doesn't have to be a single family home. I mean, what are kind of the tips to have these conversations with our clients, our investment clients, to really diversify their income stream?
Yeah. So I think one of the, and this is a very, very technical term, Hannah. I don't know if people need to write this down or not, but we have this little saying in the QI world, and it's swap till you drop. That is the
swap till you drop. Is that
that is the technical term?
Oh, is that a title for the episode?
So what, you know, if you look at what the overall benefit of the 1031 like-kind exchange is, it can be found in a single transaction, absolutely. But what gets me excited is when you begin to look at the potential of daisy chaining several exchanges together. And if I am someone who is looking at passing along real estate to the next generation of investors, little investors that we are raising up, then a 1031 might be, and if it's not part of the conversation, I'm going to say it definitely should be a part of the conversation for this reason. The reason we call it swap until you drop is if the estate rules stay as they are, which through the big, beautiful bill, I think we had to step up to about 15 million, I think it is. And if the step up in basis remains, which we want it to, then I can, as Matt, I can do as many exchanges through my life, sell property A through a 1031, buy property B, sell property B through a 1031, buy property C, D, and E, sell C, D, and E, and, you know, go on to, you know, infinity. But when I pass, those properties won't go through my estate. And my children are going to inherit those properties with a step up in basis to the fair market value of those properties when I died. And so all of that tax that I deferred through my lifetime goes away. Mm-hmm. They don't inherit that tax. So they get the step up. And so their basis is whatever the fair market value was when I died. And so if they sold them at that number, then they would pay no tax either. But if I want to look at a way of passing along property without tax to the next generation and defer as much as I can to build it and build it and build it, then a 1031 makes sense. So back to your question, I think if I have a couple who is owning some single family rental properties and they're hands-on and they're getting to that point in life where they don't want to do that anymore, and they had rather look at selling and maybe investing into a triple net type property, a Starbucks, a Dollar General, you know, because those aren't anywhere, you know, anything like that, then they can certainly, as you said, go from asset class to an asset class that may provide them some passive income for their later years in life. Or, these are the things you have to say delicately. Sometimes parents know what their children are capable of, mm-hmm. which also means they know what they might not be capable of. And so maybe passing along a portfolio of a certain asset class would not be the most beneficial for their children to receive. And that may not be because they can't run the property. But what if they had two children that lived in California? And those two children in California had no interest in owning five rental properties in North Carolina, just from the logistics of it. What if that couple could sell those properties and better realign them into producing some income for them, but also better realign them so that it's a more suitable property for those children to inherit way down the road, of course. But, you know, so looking at that, absolutely. And if I'm a loan officer talking to them, and if I happen to hear that, you know, gosh, we own all this land, and so-and-so builder just came and offered us $70,000 an acre for our land that we bought for $1,000 an acre. What do we do? What a great problem. Well, you know, knowing about a 1031 and how they could diversify that out into other properties, and then how that loan officer or mortgage banker or agent could then help them find those next properties or finance those would be, I mean, listen, that would be so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everybody has a real estate attorney on speed dial. And not every accountant that somebody works with is a real estate focused CPA or accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks that I work with, I'll just be honest, Hannah, sometimes they get stuck because they don't feel like they know the right questions to ask. They don't know how to approach it. And sometimes it's just helping them with, okay, if I were to call my CPA or if I were you, here's a couple of questions that you might want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's all people need to really get started down the right path. So at the least, doesn't matter what role, you know, that we're playing with that client, if we can help them discover a couple of important questions to them and maybe guide them to the people that they need to ask those questions to, that could be the start of something wonderful.
That's awesome. And you are a wealth of knowledge. And I'm so thankful that you came on here. How are you helping agents and loan officers today? Like, how, if I'm a loan officer or I'm an agent and I want to learn more, can I partner with you? Can I call you? Like, walk me through how you all are helping, you know, folks in the area.
A couple of ways, Hannah. I think first and most importantly, anybody can call me at any time.
Don't say that.
Well, listen, I have to say that, and I appreciate your protection because I know what you mean. But, you know, since real estate's just 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and nobody has a client ask them on Sunday morning a question or Saturday night, you know, open house during the weekend. So until Abigail smacks the phone out of my hand or politely says, hey, that's enough for today. Okay. I got you. But yeah, they can call at any time. And I think one of the beautiful things about Investors Title Exchange and myself, of course, being a part of that group is we answer our phone. That's a big thing. Now, if I'm on the phone with somebody, I can't, but respond back quickly. So you can reach me and you can ask a question or say, hey, Matt, here's kind of what's going on. What do you think? So that's just the personal one-on-one touch. Two, invite me to the office. I would love to come to your office and we can sit down and have this type of very, you know, casual, fun conversation over things. We can put on a meeting where it's you and some of your investor clients or your best, you know, agents that you work with. Let's sit down and let's have a couple of snacks and let's talk about 1031s together. So I'm mobile. I like to be in offices and seeing people and shaking hands and talking to them about things that might be important right now, but Hannah, in reality, this might not be important until a year from now. You know, that's when they really need me, but I want them to know who I am now so that when something comes up or that question is asked of them, that they know there's a resource they can call, text, email, and they can get an answer.
I love that. And we'll put all of your contact information in the show notes so people can call you anytime. Well, I can't let you leave, and you've already given us so much information, but we do ask all of our guests, and I'm interested to see what you say, is how are you planning to lend it forward for the remainder of the year?
So my wife and I host exchange students
every
year, and we've got two exchange students coming in August, one from Spain and one from France. So we host them for the full school year. They're here with us. They're like our kids. We take them everywhere. There's cheerleading, there's tennis practice, there's friends and events and everything that goes on. And so we've been doing that for several years. We absolutely love it. So that is our pay it forward, where we're just investing in. Now, okay, let me be 100% honest. It's 99% paying it forward, and it's 1% getting to know families in wonderful locations that at some point we can go and visit them. So I'm not going to lie, it's 99%. It may be even a little bit more than 1%, but it's something that we have absolutely grown to love and have met so many wonderful people and families around the world. And they come to Pilot Mountain, North Carolina for some odd reason, from Milan and Paris, and they love it here. I don't know why, but they love it. So
I love that.
Yeah.
That is so fun. So they come in August, they leave in May?
Leave in last of May, first of June, all depends on when graduation is. Yeah. And then we, you know, we go on vacations together. We do everything that, and they get to see us in our reality, you know,
yeah,
when things are good, when things are bad, when we're laughing, when we're crying, you know, when work's hard, when life's hard, and when things are great, they get to see it all and see how we respond to it. And so, it's hopefully a great witness as well.
That's awesome. Well, I love that. And again, I appreciate you coming on so much. I have two pages of notes. I learned so much from you. So thank you so much, Matt. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Hannah. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Catch us every other Thursday with a brand new episode, and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.